Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to the first in a series of, I hope, very interesting summer history shows starring Neil and Nick. And speaking of whom, here is the man himself, my co-pilot, Mr. Neil Fizzler. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Hello, Nick. How you going, mate? Superb. The season's over. And we can relax a little bit for a couple of months, can't we?
We never switch off, you and me, Fizz. We never switch off. I was at Bournemouth on Saturday, listeners, and shaking hands with a few people. It was nice to see a few old faces. And one chap said to me, "Are you going to do a show every day during the summertime?" I said, "Every day? That's a lot." Do you know how much work goes into doing this stuff? It's easier going back to work for me, listeners, I'll tell you, rather than do a show every day. It's a lot. Anyway, we are going to do some shows. And Neil, I mean, this was a great idea that you had to produce a series of, I'm going to exclude this edition, listeners, this might be longer, but a series of short history-based shows illustrating some of the stories, names, and colourful personalities of our wonderful club's history. I mean, it's a great idea, Neil.
Mate, I can't take all the credit for this. I'm going to say that I've actually nicked somebody else's idea and just applied it to us. I'm okay. Actually addicted to History Hit podcast.
Dan Snow. Yeah.
That comes out every day, but we're not going to do it every day. It would drive me absolutely. It would drive me absolutely distraction if we did this every day.
It puts both back in hospital, mate. I tell you.
It takes a good. Yeah, but it can take up to half a day to research everything, just so we've got enough content. But the idea is that we're going to produce one or two shows.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah. We're going to try and do some shows,
and they're going to be about half hour long.
Yep.
And just basically, we're just going to discuss things about Millwall history. And we've recorded, four now, haven't we? And we're going to start releasing them probably in the next week or so.
Once I've edited them up. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but it's just reliving, as you said, personalities of the past, events of the past, just something to give people something to listen to this summer, and so you get your fix of adrenaline through your Millwall veins, so to speak.
Till July the 30th, when the new season 22-23 season starts. I think it's a great idea. We're going to hopefully time them. The ideal time for a podcast, listeners, is between 20 and 30 minutes. Apparently, that's the average railway journey or car journey. So I'm hoping we can pitch those so you can listen to them, if not each morning, on a number of mornings going into your place of work. But this first show, Neil, this is like a season opener, and it links in with the whole concept of the stories and people that have made our club. And it also links in with a bit of a debate that's doing around with the departure of Jed Wallace, who played his last game in a Millwall shirt at... I keep going to call it Dean Court, is the Vitality Stadium, Bournemouth, last Saturday. And it concerns the whole concept, the overused, hackneyed word, in my opinion, in modern football, Neil, and I'm interested to know what you think, of being a legend in the club. And Jed has been described by some as a Millwall legend. And I don't know about you, but I just think it's a word that gets slightly overcooked in the modern scene.
Mate, it's one of the things I absolutely despise about modern football, along with the LA, LA load of nonsense song. Somebody has to be a legend, don't they? And let's get this right, yeah? Jed Wallace is not a Millwall legend, yeah?
He's a very good player. He's not a legend. He's
been an excellent player and will be remembered as an excellent player for us. And is undoubtedly the best player in this squad. Yeah. Let's get it right. That's set our stall out. But anybody who says that Jed Wallace is a Millwall legend hasn't been going to this club for more than 5 minutes.
No, yeah? And has no concept of the history or the depth of playing achievements and managerial achievements. We're going to keep it to playing here, but no, you're right. I mean, and I also want to say that I really have enjoyed Jed's contribution in these past about 5 or 6 years, I think, he's been with us. He's certainly been one of the most inventive and creative players that we've seen in a very long time at the Den. So, you know, he's probably going back for at least 20 years into the Cahill and the Mark McGee type of era. But that does not a legend make. So I tried to approach this, Neil, and I sent Neil listeners my handwritten notes, which I had a quick look at this morning, and I come to realise it looks a bit like the hieroglyphics at the base of Cleopatra's Needle when you look at them on an iPhone. But I tried to, in my notes, to consider what does the word legend actually mean, and we've already explored, does it mean, are you a very good player, which we decided it doesn't. It also has a certain emotional quality. I think a lot of people regard their favourite players of their youth as in this category, Neil. I mean, we've all started going at one point or another in our younger years, and the players that feature heavily at that point tend to be the ones that spring to your mind when you talk about your favourites of all time, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, whatever that might be. But I think you've also got to look at something in a bit more depth than just being a favourite player or a kind of an emotional response, really. It's got to be based on, in my opinion at least, on some measure of their length of service, their achievements and their contribution to the club, however you might define that. How do you see the concept of a legend, Neil?
Let's just say that if Jed Wallace spent the rest of his career at Millwall, there's a chance he could be a Millwall legend. He's been in 5 years. Was he part of the side that got us promoted from?
He was in the playoff win, wasn't he? He was on at Wembley. Some good seasons since.
Has he won player of the year 5 years on the trot? Because that might qualify him as a potential legend. But for me, a legend is one of your all-time great players.
I agree.
That is how you define a legend. And he doesn't come into that category. He comes into probably a category below or even a category below that. Because you've got people like Alex Ray. Is he a club legend? Maybe not. He's still
I agree.
Terry Hurlock is probably in between, isn't he? He's one of those.
Well, Hurlock's an interesting one because many, many people, and I've broached this subject online before now, and had my fingers burned with the fierceness of the reaction if you dare question the legendary status of, say, Terry Hurlock. He was a very good player. He was a member of a very particularly fondly remembered period in Mill history, my own included. And he also, one of the factors that I tried to consider in my assessment of legendary status, and Hurlock comes into this, is are you the embodiment of Millwall Football Club? And in many ways, the fans on the terraces saw themselves in Terry Hurlock. But in terms of playing record and midfielder goals scored, maybe is unfair area to judge, but certainly appearances, no, he wouldn't fall into the legendary status. I still don't think he does come into that category.
He's probably actually a legendary figure.
Legendary figure, yeah.
Rather than a legendary player. Well, I know we're talking a load of nonsense here, and this probably isn't going to make too much sense to people, but I think you've got legendary figures sometimes, and he falls into that category.
Yeah, he's and I've put it as I don't know if it's the right word, listeners, but I put, are you the embodiment of Millwall Football Club? And yes, Terry Hurlock certainly is, because he represents the fans out there on the pitch. But I think you can't just base it on that either. I think you've got to somehow weigh up length of service, contribution, this vague idea of being an embodiment of the club, and some measure of importance to the club, which these are all fairly subjective terms. But I thought, well, we've got to try and start somewhere, listeners. And I'm going to exclude managers, because we are talking about players here, because for me, you know, we've spoken many, many times on these history shows about the importance of names like Bob Hunter and Tom Thorne, the actual creators of Millwall Football Club. Our greatest ever manager was John Doherty, who got us promoted to the highest level that the club could probably ever have dreamed of achieving. But we're going to exclude those. We're talking about playing legends. Now, for me, I'm going to try and somehow weigh up the appearance table. You can look on millwallhistory.org.uk, listen, do your own research if you want to. But you're talking about playing legends post 1921, because that's when this particular website begins, and the significance of that is, yeah, join the Football League, Neil, Third Division South. So we're kind of excluding fairly or unfairly some of the great figures of the Victorian Edwardian era, mostly because we don't really have great records of that time in statistical sense. We have some. You know, you have to do some deep research to find out some of the stuff on those players. But players post 1921 are fairly well depicted on Mill history. And I've tried to balance appearances versus contribution. And then what I've put, very poncy word now, this is symbolism, embodiments, contribution, and somehow tried to come out with an answer at the end of that, Neil. So shall I run my playing legends in terms of appearances in reverse order? The fifth most
50% of our listeners was symbolism.
If you want it any other way, listeners, there are other podcasts out there. Go seeking them right now. Turn this off. Go and find another one. Symbolism.
If you've got this far.
We don't care. We don't care. No one likes us. We don't care. But our fifth most the highest appearances is a surprising figure, actually. Number five in the list of appearances, Alan McCleary, 392 starts with 21 off of the substitutes bench, a defender, so 10 goals. His career was 1982 to 1993, promoted as part of the 1988 side, the first division side. Wouldn't have thought of him as being a Lions legend, but he's got a pretty good case based on those figures alone, I'd say, as a very rock solid defender in one of our greatest teams.
Yeah, probably isn't a legend, if I'm honest. He's another one who falls into that category just below legendary status. He'd be remembered as one of our all time great players.
Yeah, he doesn't feature in my symbolism list, listeners. You'll be glad to know he doesn't feature in the embodiment of Millwall, which is harsh on Alan, because I think he was a very good defender.
Brilliant defender. The embodiment. Here we go. I'm sounding like Nick Hart now. I just played on the other place, and I wouldn't be using big words like embodiment and symbolism.
And joint manager, of course, in the years preceding the eventual promotion in 2000-2001. He was joint manager with another name that we will come back to, with Keith Stevens. Number four in the appearance list, Neil, if I may, is Neil Harris. 323 starts, 108 off the bench. So there's over, 430-odd appearances if you combine those two numbers together. And club record goal scorer, 138 goals. With the Lions in two spells, 97 to 2004, then came back 2007 to 2011. Managed us, of course, promoted as a manager, and as a player, promoted as part of the championship winning side in 2000, 2001. I'm going to make the case early, Neil, that Neil Harris is strongly placed in the Lions Legend stakes.
I've got to be honest. Let's put our cards on the table. He's probably Mill's greatest ever player. If not the greatest ever player, he's certainly in the top three.
Well, he's top scorer, 138 goals, which is a club record.
Played in the final.
And his image is on the railway bridge. So therefore, I put him in my symbolism diagram. I've actually got a diagram here, listeners, of the symbolism list. So is the one name, I'm going to short circuit my own show here, listeners, or our own show, that appears in all three of my lists. So keep Neil Harris's name in your mind. Next to my third highest appearances, Neil, a legendary name. I mean, if you'd have said to me before doing this show, think of a Mill legend, I would have said Harry Cripps. 432 appearances from 1961 to 74, 11 as a substitute, 39 goals. That's quite a high return for a fullback. He was promoted three times in the Mill shirt, listeners, 1961-62, which I think was fourth division. 64 to 65 will be, that's from the fourth division again to the third division, I think. And then 65-66 from the third into the second. And a member, of course, Neil, of the record-breaking home, unbeaten at home run. A very strong case for Harry Cripps, I'd say.
Mate, I don't even think anybody needs the. Yeah, this doesn't even warrant discussion, I think. I think people can guess where we're going, and Harry Cripps would have to be in the top three, in my opinion.
Does it depend on your age, Neil? I mean, a lot of the debate I saw online about Jed, and this is not a knock Jed show, far from it, listeners. But I think the younger you are, the more you appreciate the players of your quite recent youth. You and I, being slightly longer in the tooth, and I actually saw Cripps play in a Millwall shirt. Somehow, maybe it's the same syndrome, only stretched over a longer period of time. And for me, it was self-evident this moment I stepped across the threshold of the Coldblow Lane, the old den, how highly regarded Harry Cripps was in the crowd. He was and was seen as, we've mentioned Hurlock already, but if you want the embodiment of Millwall Football Club, it was Harry Cripps in the eyes of the fans.
He was a leader, wasn't he? He was a leader on the pitch, and he was almost a leader on the terraces, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. I saw this described as a man whose enthusiasm knew no bounds and could almost frighten the opponents just because of his sheer verve for the game. And I do remember, this is a little anecdote for the younger listeners, but I used to go in the seats sometimes. If I had a spare 10p, you could pay to get in the seats at the old den. And one of Harry Cripps's party pieces was, if we got a free kick, he was a defender, so I think it must have been a left-sided defender because he was always on our side. He would get a free kick, wait for the referee to turn his back, and then, still bending over to adjust the ball, would move forward about 10 paces to steal 10 yards without standing up, much to the amusement of the crowd. They loved it. They loved Harry Cripps, Neil. It was a real thing. You could feel it, touch it.
Yeah, shame that he went so early in life. Do one of these shows with Harry Cripps. How great would that be?
If I could have one show, I would love to have spoken to Harry. He just sounds like such a character. He finished up at Charlton, I think. I remember he had a season at Charlton. Actually, they were promoted, I believe. This is in the old Division 3 days of the mid-70s. And I think Charlton were managed by a manager called Andy Nelson. He snapped up Harry when he left the den. So, yeah, his playing record was pretty good, as well as this. He was an iconic figure. I mean, there's another word that gets overused, Neil. But I think Harry makes a very strong. We're using some long words, listeners. This is why you tune into the show. Now, second on the appearance list is a name that maybe doesn't spring to mind in quite the same way. I don't know. Keith Stevens, Neil. 546 appearances for Mill across 1980 to 1999, and he managed this. 10 goals, 11 off the substitute bench. promoted twice as a player in 1984-85 and in 1987-88, part of the legendary promotion-winning side. Great player, but he wouldn't. Why does he not leap into my mind as a Millwall legend? And I can't answer that question. But he doesn't spring as naturally to mind as some of the other names we've mentioned already. How do you see Keith?
Yeah. I think he'd be in my top 10 if I had to name a top 10 Millwall legends of all time. He would have to be in there just purely because he's the Rhino, isn't he?
He's Rhino. He's the second highest appearance, whatever emotional or subjective view you want to take of him as a legend. I mean, he's certainly, he's above Harry Cripps. We've explored Harry already. And then there's Rhino on 546 is an immense amount of appearances too.
He's another player that embodied or symbolised what Millwall is about. Yeah. The greatest player in the world. Not the most naturally gifted player in the world, but gave you 110% every time he went out on that pitch. And he also chinned Lee Bowyer.
that gives an extra impetus to his case for being a Lion. I mean, all of these players, listeners, are Lions legends. We're trying to apply some measure of structure to this. So I take my hat off to Keith Stevens, a truly, truly immense figure in playing terms for Mill. And of course, as a manager, he managed with Macca and single-handedly at the end of the 90s when times were quite tough, financially quite tough for the Lions. So he has his place there, Neil.
He helped bring through that great side. Harris, Cahill, Paul Ifill, probably.
Ifill, yeah, Reed, Stephen Reed,
Neil,
Bertram, you know, all the basis of the championship. Yeah.
Well, let's forget how it ended, that game at Brentford, which I think
it didn't end well. It
needed to be made.
Yeah.
Let's get it right. And one or two things I've heard of how the club's treated him in more recent years.
Is a
stain on this club, and you're right, doesn't sit right. I know they're being charged.
He took a lot of abuse at the Brentford game, which again, to me, a bit like when Harris left us, Neil. I mean, you know, there's in the moment, there's the heat of the moment, and I get that. But it does seem a tremendous shame when players of such immense, made such an immense contribution to our club, start getting slagged in that way. There we are. But I think his contribution is as big as any of the names we've mentioned so far. He also was, as you say, instrumental in fielding the young Neil Harris, who we've already mentioned. Makes a strong case of being a legend in his own right. But the number one, the highest appearance in player for the club is the one and only, would have been my choice as playing legend, Barry Kitchener. 589 appearances, Neil. 7 as a sub. 28 goals from 1967 to 1983 and a part of a promotion side of 75-76. He was an immense figure in the Mill defence and my favourite player as a kid.
Somebody else I'd love to have done one of these shows with. You speak to players from that era.
Yeah.
It's a travesty how he never played for England. He was a far, far better defender and player than people actually gave him credit for. Incredibly loyal player and a popular one. I think a legend is somebody that years after they finish playing, they still get the kind of reception that Kitch would get when he pitched up at the Den for a game.
Yeah.
Everybody of all eras. I think my son walked into him one day. I said, you can't walk into Kitch.
But you probably could. You probably could because he was that kind of man.
That's right. That's right. A quick story. Just before I wanted to, I do Where Are They Now? For the Football League paper.
Yeah.
And Kitch had this phone number for donkey's years that if you ever wanted him, you could get him.
Right.
Yeah. So I wanted to do a Millwall team that he played in. So I thought, oh, well, I'll phone Kitch. Great. Great guy. You ever phone him.
Right.
Whatever you need. So I dial this number. Not a voice I recognise on the end of the phone. I said, oh, it's Kitch there, please. Not a bloody another one. I said, excuse me? He said he's bloody moved and didn't take his phone number with him. I said, the countless number of bloody calls I get for this guy, Kitch. Who is he?
Who is he?
Yeah.
I'm like, Barry Kitchener.
He's Barry Kitchener, mate. He said, who's Barry Kitchener? I said, oh, go on the internet and type in Barry Kitchener.
Yeah, yeah.
I can apologize.
Rah-rah, zigga-zagga, Barry Kitchener. I think as a, I mean, if you go into the embodiment kind of consideration, listeners, I think that Kitch has got to be in that list. He's certainly at the top of the playing appearance list. And as a contributor to the club, he was part of my youth. And for that reason alone, he represented what it was to be a Millwall player and a Millwall fan. He was rock. He's a rock in defence.
He qualifies as a legend. But when you take in everything else, but I said the top three, it can go in any kind of order, can't it, really, depending
on... Yeah, I mean, we're not going to come to a definitive answer, but we're going to name the big contenders, and I think he's got to be one of the big contenders, along with Harry.
He would be in the top three, I think, along with Cripps, along with Harris, and there's Kitch.
Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, well, Derek Posse is in the scoring legends. I mean, there's a difference of approach. And it's unfair on defenders, listeners, because obviously Posse and the others on this list are forwards, so that's the nature of their business, to score goals. So it's hard on a defender. But if you take the
embodiment, you speak to fans of your era.
Yeah, Poss, yeah, absolutely.
The Poss is right in there. He was bang, a club legend.
I mean, he was the club record goal scorer for many years. He was part and parcel of when I first started going, listeners, which was the back end of the 71-72 season. I was really interested to see the event that was held at the Millwall Community Centre recently, where some of the old players, Alan Dorney and Dennis Burnett, and I think Steve Brown was there. Yeah, and Brian King. Because that they're aging now; they're in their 80s, and they're elderly gentlemen now. But when I started going, these were the boys. These were a formidable team. It came achingly close, and being that very Millwall star, we just missed out. But Derek Posse was as dangerous a forward as you could think of in Millwall terms. He's number four on the scoring legends, but just above Jack Cock, Neil, who we've mentioned on our history shows previously, on 83 goals. Derek Posse on 87. Interestingly, Steve Morrison at 92, and you wouldn't think of Steve Morrison being even in a debate of this kind, but there he is. He's on the third on the scoring all-time list, 92 goals for Morrow.
People now say he's a Millwall legend, but to me, he's not a Millwall legend. Yeah, he falls into that was a very, very good player for us. An excellent
and a major contributor. Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Doesn't quite step up to that legendary status. But if you're of a younger vintage, yeah.
Absolutely.
Your all-time favourite players, and you probably do look upon him. But in an historical sense, isn't a Millwall legend in the true sense?
No, I mean, for many people of a younger vintage, and it's, you know, you can't help how old you are, listeners. So the fact that Neil and I are old gits means that we've seen things, like, I'm going to sound like at the end of Blade Runner, we've seen things that you haven't seen. But the goal at Wembley, the cross in from the left, and then Morrison to tap it home from that, Lee Gregory, wasn't it, got a kind of header to it.
Yeah.
Is an iconic moment, Neil. So why wouldn't he be considered if you were of a certain vintage in amongst your legendary list? But for me, I agree. He's a very, very good player. 92 goals speaks how good a player he was for us.
Especially in that first spell, before he went to Norwich, he was unplayable. Let's get it right. Yeah. There was a game, was it the Huddersfield?
Huddersfield playoff game. Yeah.
He was absolutely unplayable at times.
He was a very good, and he was a lethal finisher, something we don't get very often. Don't get very often at Millwall. Posse was a lethal finisher, listeners. Steve Morrison was an
all-time good player as one of our players, but not as a legend, I think.
No, he's certainly, he's, for me, you're right, and there's an emotional quality on that, and I agree, he's a very, very good player, and a major contributor to our club's history, but not a legend for me. And neither, interestingly, is one of the best, if not the best player I ever saw in a Mill show. It was Teddy Sheringham on 111 goals and a member of the greatest side that got promoted in 1987-88 and then the great First Division days. But you wouldn't think of Teddy as a Mill legend, Neil, which is for similar reasons to Steve Morrison, I think. There's a sense he was a major, major contributor to our club, but not quite with the emotional pull of some of the other names that we've mentioned already.
Yeah, probably. Teddy Sheringham is one of those that I'm on the fence about. You know, I don't sit on the fence too often. I generally say,
No, you're very beige, wishy-washy kind of bloke, mate.
But he's one of those where you could make a case for him being a Millwall legend. And you can make a case for him maybe not being a Millwall legend. He's one of those players where you can go either way on it. You can go with the wind, as some people do. And it's very trendy.
We don't go with the wind on this show, listeners. I don't go with the wind. I've got a great high regard for Teddy Sheringham. He is the best in the sense of technical ability, the best player I think I've seen in a Millwall shirt personally. His track record, his goal scoring record, the fact that he stayed with us when we were relegated, I mentioned this a few times, goes a long, long way with me. Yes, I know he moved on to West Ham in the end, but that's, you know, and he said he supported every club he signed up for.
The funny thing is, Harris is a legend, let's get it right. But would he get in front of Teddy Sheringham and Derek Posse?
No is the answer to that question. No.
If you were naming your all-time Millwall 11, it's strange because...
Probably not. Probably, I'm saying no decisively. I'm getting back on the fence.
If your all-time record goal scorer can't get in that side, maybe he shouldn't be a legend. But he is a legend because he is our all-time leading goal scorer. He survived cancer. He played in a cup final. He almost got his goals almost single-handedly won as a second division title. He would have played in the Premier League if it hadn't have been for...
Well, that's an interesting point. I was just going to pick up on that, and I was going to ask a question of you, Neil, because I think Teddy Sheringham doesn't need to prove whether he could play at the very highest level because he went on to show that he could and did. Played for Manchester United, won the lot, England, Spurs. Doesn't need to show that is self-evident that he was of a Premier League quality. Derek Posse, I believe, was good enough. His career went off the boil when he left us. He went to Palace, didn't he? And he never quite made it to the heights that I thought, maybe he thought he should have. He finished up, I think, playing in America in the USA, which was a bit of a, probably a step down from where he should have been. I don't know if I'm being out of turn on saying that. But I think Teddy Sheringham, Derek Posse, both in their pomp, was a Premier League level strike force, Neil, as good as anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you go back in time, Jack Cock was probably one of the great goal scorers of his time. But yeah, obviously nobody's seen him play, so but Harris wouldn't get involved or in front of those two in my all-time greatest Millwall side. And that is probably something that we can come on to of, yeah, it's probably actually another show.
Yeah, no, I agree. Get
people to pick our all-time Millwall teams. I know you did it on the official club podcast.
Yeah, I mean that was slightly hurried because I didn't have any time to think about it deeply. So I was kind of trying to do it on the hoof a little bit there, and I hope I did an okay job. Listen, you can always argue about every position. Okay. I think Neil Harris as an all time club goal scorer 130, and I'm not going to minimise Neil's achievement. I think I'm going to come back to him by the end of this show, listeners. But I think that his goals were scored predominantly in a lower level, Division 3, as I would think of it, the third tier, the League 1 level, some in the Championship. Whereas Teddy and Posse, to some extent, have both had Teddy did score goals at a higher level. Posse probably should have done. I just think they came from a different level. The only thing I would say with Neil Harris, Neil, and I don't want to down him too much, because obviously there was Neil Harris pre-cancer and there was Neil Harris post-cancer, wasn't there? The young Neil Harris was as hungry and as dangerous a striker as I can remember seeing. It's just we didn't see that side of him for very long because of illness and health.
I think we'd have struggled to have kept hold of him that summer after promotion, actually.
Yeah, Spurs and Liverpool reputedly were coming in, weren't they?
West Ham apparently were interested. Yeah. One or two other clubs, so yeah. I think struggled to have kept hold of him, but I think he'd have migrated back to us eventually.
Yeah.
Probably would have been as quickly as it turned out. I think he had two or three spells, didn't he, towards the end?
Yeah, and he you know, increasingly exploited his experience to make the most of League One situations, and he was a very intelligent player.
Yeah, exactly.
Body was failing him, so you know, he used his nous, which was considerable, and let's not forget his managerial contribution as well, which marks him out from some of the other names. To be honest,
it's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Final list was one of these things you do these in as a kind of what I call them, icebreakers in team meeting listeners. I'm sure a lot of you out there have done this, where you write on the wall my symbolism list here, Neil. This is where you just put names on and scroll on a whiteboard. Who I would have thought of as Lions legends based on zero thinking or research. So I've written Cripps, Kitch, we've mentioned Teddy, I've written on there, Terry Hurlock, Rhino. Bomber. Just these were just names that came to me when I thought, well, who might we finish up with? And I think, you know, we can eliminate and include some names over others based on what we've said in the show. But it's just interesting to me that the names that appear, there's only one name that appears in all three lists, and that's Neil Harris. That's playing legends, the appearances, scoring, and then this very airy fairy symbolism idea. That's an embodiment idea that I've tried to put into words. You're going to be taking your pick, really, in truth, between Neil Harris, in my opinion, Harry Cripps, and Barry Kitchener. If you're going to come up with a Lions legend, and really, it's permanently anyone from those three, I'd say.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've said it a few times now. It's there's no right and there's no wrong in this. That's no. Unless you Jed Wallace is a Millwall legend, and then you are quite obviously wrong. Sorry, I'm not bashing him. Seriously, honestly, I don't want to be cancelled. I'm not bashing him. Yeah, but
he's a very good player. He's a very good player. We wish him well. Player.
And yeah. I go back to what I said in a couple of other shows. I think he'll end up back with us. Yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah. No, I think
there's a clear to be a legend. Yeah, maybe. And then maybe we have this discussion in 5 years' time.
If we, yeah, God willing, we're still here for it. But I mean, there's a clear emotional connection. When I was at Bournemouth on Saturday, and the end bit was quite touching, to be honest, when he came over to the crowd and the applause, and clearly he was touched, there were tears in his eyes. And there's a clear emotional connection, and I don't knock that. We are an emotional club at the end of the day. We're not a club based on ruthlessness.
There are two or three other players that symbolise us, and I'm going to say they symbolise everything. Kevin Muscat, even though he was only around for two or three seasons, you want in a Millwall player. He just didn't give a shit, did he?
Hard and it was good. It was good as well. Yeah.
And was a good player. Not an all-time legend, not one of our all-time great players. Yeah. Because he wasn't around, but symbolises. Somebody else who symbolises everything that Millwall is about is Alan Dunn. And this is going to surprise a lot of people, given my track record. But for somebody who probably by his own admission, he wasn't the greatest player in the world.
No.
But played for us, I don't know how many times, 350 times, something like that.
I can tell you, he was number six. He just didn't make my list of top five appearances. He made 348 appearances, 39 off the bench, and scored a very creditable 23 goals in that time as a defender.
And another player that symbolises everything that Millwall's about, yeah?
Yeah,
you don't have to be the greatest player in the world, but effort gets you a long way. And effort got him nearly 400 appearances for us. And I'd love to play once for Millwall. He's played 400 times, nearly.
Absolutely. Let me on the same theme, the Dunn theme. I want to throw in Najim Abdou, Jimmy Abdou.
Jimmy Abdou will be remembered.
The same. Yeah.
If Jimmy Abdou could pass a football,
he wouldn't be playing at Millwall, would he? He would be. Exactly. Nor would Tony Cray, 300 appearances, another Millwall fan. I think there's these shows are very hard to. I mean, there is no definitive answer, listeners. I can tell you what my definitive answer is in a minute. But
Robbie Ryan, another
Robbie
one.
Robbie Ryan,
not the greatest player, but gave you everything when he went out onto that pitch. Tony Craig, as you've quite rightly said, Nick.
Les Brierley. And underrated, because everyone talks about the epitome of Mill being Terry Hurlock, and he had a double act going with Les Brierley, another very...
Ray later on. Yeah. Probably actually will be remembered as maybe he's pushing up there as one of our all-time great players.
You know,
Brierley, there's people... Steve Wood may be a little bit towards... an extent, maybe I'm just throwing out names now, and
some level, that's what you do in these shows. I mean, we've mentioned Hurlock, and I don't want to sound like I'm knocking Terry Hurlock, because I love Terry Hurlock. He was a very good player, played for England, England B, and he had quality on the ball. But he had a career that took him to many clubs. For some reason, he found an emotional connection at Millwall, but he's played at Rangers and Southampton, I think Fulham he played for. So for me, for that reason, he's a very, very good player. He isn't in the category of Mill legend, and yet he would be one. I've got him on my symbolism list here, which is a great, great feat and achievement for him. Make my symbolism list. But I'm gonna just to sum up the show for me, and I'll come back to you, Neil. My choice of Mill legend, the only name that appears in all of these three categories that I've got is Neil Harris. His picture is up on the railway arch. So by any logical standard, I should say Neil Harris, but I'm going to say grab Barry Kitchener because I'm an emotional Millwall fan at the end of the day. So Kitch for me, but there's a case for any of those other three. Who would you go for in the end if you have to choose one?
Oh, probably Kitch, Harris, and then Cripps. Somebody who we haven't mentioned, and I think it's an all-time legend, is Tim Cahill.
Cahill
will be remembered as one of our all-time great players.
At a level, World Cup level. Yeah, yeah.
It deserves legendary status for the Cup semi-final winner.
Yeah.
And is definitely one of our all-time great players. If you name an all-time great side from all eras, Tim Cahill has to be in there because people ask me to name in the last 10 years, 15 years, your all-time favourite Millwall players. Muscat, for me, is up there.
That's an interesting choice, yeah. No,
it's an absolute lunatic. Yeah. I see a bit of myself in that. And then I would name Tim Cahill as more recent times, as because he was quality, wasn't he? He was absolute quality, and he stuck with us. I know we didn't get as much from him as we should have done, and because we let his contract run down, he wasn't going to sign another one. He was part of that great era at the
golden days, member of a golden side,
turn of the century, wasn't it? Which, if you want to debate your best Millwall sides ever, you've got the legendary 59 game unbeaten run side, you've got the side that Benny Fenton built and got us to within a few minutes of the first division. You've got Doc's side that got us promoted and then we stayed up.
Yeah.
Then you've got that McGee /
period. Yeah.
Dennis Wise side.
Yeah.
Cahill would be one of my all-time favourite players and would be a legendary player in my view.
There we are, listeners. We can't solve this conundrum. No one can.
Nobody can. As we've said, there's no right and there's no wrong in this. But
no.
I think you need some historical context when you're claiming that a modern day player who's about to leave is a Millwall legend, because when you examine it, he isn't. But if you think that, well, you're wrong, but
do send your complaints about the show to Neil Fisler on Twitter, listeners. No, do let us know what you think. It's been a fascinating show. This is the opener for a series of shows that we're going to do, examining various historical figures and incidents and storylines. And I'm hoping that
we've got some absolute blinders lined up.
We do.
Some stuff that I've just literally fallen across. And
it's in the nature of our club, Neil. We are a club that always has a story, and that's what we're hoping to try and capture in this series this summertime.
Absolutely blinding on about German POWs coming up.
There we are.
And that was found just purely because I was looking at Jack Cock's life and happened to read the Daily Mail. And this, he's mentioned in this story. And I think, I didn't even know about that. Right. Summer history podcast.
This is why we do it. We hope we've whetted your appetite, dear listener. Thank you for listening to this show. From Neil and myself, it's a big thank you. And we'll be back very, very soon with the first edition proper in Neil and Nick's summer history shows. So until then, thank you for listening. And bye for now.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.